Bears a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure MVP and a Microsoft Azure architect, helping people move to Microsoft Azure and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane.
Contact us by email.
Feedback@needtoknow.cloud. It's your destination for anything Microsoft Cloud, including Azure and Office 365.
More and more from the Need to Know podcast. Yes, more and more and more. And as I speak about more and more and more, I'm joined by our favourite more and more and more, Mark Keane, on the other side of the microphone. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, Rob. How you going? So, we've just had, yeah, you're right, more and more. So, 133, this is episode 133. We've just had on Jeff Alexander in the previous podcast, 132. And we've got Greg Lowe coming up shortly on this podcast. You'll be speaking to Greg Lowe all about SQL, because Greg is the SQL guru that there is.
Yep, exactly. And he runs a number of community groups and also does some podcasts around as well. So we'll have all that in the show notes so you can keep in touch and you can see all the good stuff that Greg's pumping out. And obviously, we'll be speaking to him about his upcoming presentations at the Microsoft Ignite on the Gold Coast, which, again, is now getting closer and closer and closer. Are you excited yet, Mark?
Well, quietly, mildly excited. We do have other presenters also coming up. So we've got Gino Barletta. He's presenting at Ignite. He's coming up on one of the episodes of our podcast. Dux Raymond, he's coming up very, very soon on a future episode. Not previous, future. And you're talking to Dux, aren't you, Rob? He's a Microsoft Regional Director.
Yeah, because we're talking about SharePoint. I know that doesn't particularly interest you at all, so we thought we'd keep you out of the mix and stop the snide comments from the back of the microphone.
That's right. That's why we're also talking to Michael Friedrich about something more interesting in my books. So he's coming up. Michael Friedrich works at Microsoft, and he used to work at Vigilant IT. And speaking of which, Vigilant IT, we're also speaking to Stefan Boudot, who's also coming up, and he's also presenting at Ignite. He's got two sessions that he's presenting on. We've also spoken to Daniel Apps from Vigilant IT on a previous podcast about 10 or so episodes ago when we first kicked off the Ignite special of podcasts, Rob.
Yeah, so, I mean, we look back and we've certainly done a lot of episodes. We've still got a few more to crank through before Ignite kicks off, but there's certainly been a lot of information to digest, and hopefully everybody out there has enjoyed the episodes. Please don't forget to give us feedback@needtoknow.cloud. We've been getting more people speaking to us face-to-face or sending us emails, also letting us know that they are enjoying the information and the guests. So, again, keep that coming. It's always good to let Mark know that his hard work is paying off when it comes to mixing it and making it the best audio experience for you, the listener.
Well, here we go. I'm just looking now. So, Daniel Apps, who was the first one presenter we had on for the Ignite specials, that was episode 123. So we've had 10 episodes since, and we've got another 5 or so to push out. So so we're seriously cranking through. And yeah, thank you everybody for the feedback that we've received. And Rob, we got feedback from somebody, and I know it's out of the ordinary, but in relation to the Alan Birchall one, but I think there might have been some issue with the mic, but some sort of echo. But basically, we've ironed that out, haven't we? So we don't have to worry about that anymore.
So what we do is we occasionally do this sort of thing. We stuff up recordings, we add extra little hidden messages that you play backwards, and we see if anybody notes them. So that's your challenge for this episode.
It's a little trick just to see if we do have any listeners.
It's not called a trick. It's called a marketing
ploy.
That's exactly right. So, again, once you've listened to the podcast forwards, make sure you listen to it backwards as well, where you'll get secret messages and additional information. So that'll keep you busy. So why don't we dive into some news? Why don't you kick it off with some stuff about Azure for us?
So yeah, connecting Power BI to Azure Analysis Services. So last October, Microsoft released the preview of Azure Analysis Services built on the proven analytics engine of Microsoft SQL Server Analysis Services. So with Azure Analysis Services, you can host semantic data models in the cloud. So now you can use Power BI Desktop to build reports against Azure Analysis Services and deploy the report to powerbi.com. Excellent. All you need is a data model deployed in Azure Analysis Services, Power BI Desktop, and a Power BI account. There's a video link here on how to do it, which talks about the Azure Analysis Services, and also to a link we'll put in the show notes to my blog, which has more information on the topic.
Excellent. All right. So the one that I have for this episode is that Microsoft has announced that Outlook Mobile now has turned a grand age of 2 years. They've also announced that it is integrating with other apps, some of your favorite apps, as Microsoft call it. So again, these are basically add-ins that you can plug into your Outlook on iOS, and they will allow you to connect to things like Microsoft Dynamics 365. So Microsoft Dynamics 365 obviously is becoming one of the larger business applications that customers are using, connected to the Office 365 services, and we need to be able to get to the information it provides directly in our emails, so we can look at things as when we made the last contact with our people in our lists, whether they're a creditor, if they owe us any money. So that's pretty cool. It's also got the ability to connect to Nimble. Nimble is a social CRM application. Must admit that I have not heard of that, but
Nimble Storage.
That's
what I've heard of.
Yeah, of course. What else would you have heard of? And we've also got connection to Trello. So Trello obviously is like a organization for your projects, a bit of a to-do list, which is very similar to Planner, but you can now connect that into your Outlook. Also Evernote. Evernote, I suppose, used to be a very, very good note-taking option, and I think OneNote is far superior. But again, if you do use Evernote, you can now connect to it with your OneDrive for iOS. We've also got a Microsoft Translator in there, Smartsheets, if you do use that. And again, we've also got this thing called Giphy, which is the world's first GIF search engine. So if you're looking for those special GIFs using your Outlook Mobile, you can do that as well. God only knows why, but apparently you can. So hopefully Microsoft appreciates that there are lots and lots of people that do need to search for GIFs from their Outlook. Now, I suppose the overall takeaway is firstly that it's good to see that the Outlook Mobile continues to be developed, enhanced, and improved, because I think it's certainly the way that more and more people are going to access their emails wherever they are, even at the detriment of the desktop side of things. And as with all Microsoft products, probably something else that many may not realize, that Microsoft has gone to a user voice system where basically you can go in and make suggestions and improvements for any of the products, and these can then be voted up and commented by others. And Microsoft certainly uses the user voice as a way to determine what are the priorities from their user base. So again, if you want to make some contributions or suggestions around any of Microsoft's products, do a search for that product and user voice, and that'll direct you in the right location to give your feedback directly to Microsoft. Anything else from you, Mark, on Azure?
Well, I was going to say, Rob, because the Outlook Mobile is not precise, it could mean two things. So I just wanted to clarify, do you mean Outlook Mobile as in the Outlook Mobile app itself, or outlook.office365.com, which is a URL which works in a mobile browser? It's because I think it's HTML5. It is sort of it molds, because there's two apps, in fact, isn't there? There's Outlook web app, app, and there's Outlook app.
No, there's not. There's not two apps. There is an app you download from an app store and put on your app device, being your mobile. The other one is simply accessed through a browser. So the indication here that I've got in the article we'll link to talks about the app, the dedicated software that you put on your
Outlook
Office
app.
Yeah, basically.
The Outlook application? Yeah, because I've got an OWA app as well.
There are lots and lots of apps if you go into the store and have a look for the Microsoft side of things. So as we've seen such ado, you can probably replace all of those icons on your iDevice with Microsoft devices and turn it into a pseudo Microsoft phone that, again, has a very, very large market share.
And I've got about 22 Microsoft apps on my iPhone, and on my Android I had previously had about the same amount.
Yep, that'll certainly keep you busy at night. So what else have we got in the Azure world?
Well, the new Azure Marketplace, Microsoft have announced they're launching the new Azure Marketplace experience. It'll make it much easier for users to navigate the product catalog and find the right solution for their cloud application without having to log on to the Azure portal. So, you can now search for a product or service in the search bar and get search suggestions. So, for example, you may want to be a blogger who wants to do a WordPress environment and set one up. You can start typing the word WordPress in the top of the search button and pick the WordPress option that best suits your needs. Or, if you are not sure which product best fits your needs, the categories in the Azure Marketplace are a good place to start. You can click the storage category to see the top recommended products or filter by subcategories such as backup and recovery. The new product pages make it easier and more convenient to deep dive into the product. Click on the product tiles to open the product pages. You'll see the two sections. The overview section contains detailed technical information about product features and screenshots, and also to the plans and pricing section contains different SKUs, pricing options, and publisher recommendations. Also, two test drives are ready to go in the new Azure Marketplace. They're environments that allow you to experience a product for free without even needing to have an Azure subscription. We talked about a previous product that was released in the Azure Marketplace as a test drive on a previous podcast, the new storage solution. Can't remember exactly. I think it's SoftNAS by memory is the storage solution. So you can basically use SoftNAS in the Azure Marketplace and do a free test drive without even having an Azure subscription. It's awesome news. So yeah, Rob, this is all sort of coming out, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes.
Yep, so I think that unless you've got anything else, it's probably a good move for us to get straight into our guest for this episode.
Greg Lowe.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent. As we normally do, Greg, can you give our listeners a bit of a background on who you are and what you do before we get into having a look at your sessions?
Yeah, look, been around the industry a long time. Worked as a developer from an engineer, actually, from late 70s through till well into the 80s, and doing development till probably even the late 90s. I started working with SQL Server about 1992, so long enough to have seen most things happen with it over the years. I worked very closely with the product group on a daily basis, so that's long enough to have a very long love-hate relationship, you know, and but I get way more out of being involved with them than not. Also part of the Microsoft Regional Director Program. I think there's about 150 of us worldwide, and the main thing that does, that gets me access to some very interesting people and a whole lot of sort of internal mailing lists and things inside Microsoft that are really quite interesting. Most of the time in my consulting work, I work with software houses predominantly, trying to get them to get the best out of SQL Server. Most of the ones I deal with at the moment are predominantly large financials, the main places.
Excellent. All right. Well, unsurprisingly, both of Greg's presentations at Ignite will be on SQL. So the first one we've got is why your next application should be Azure SQL DB as a data store. And the second one, which is probably the one we'll start on, is what's new in SQL Server 2016 for developers. So do you want to start off giving us a bit of background into that presentation? And again, you know, the guts of it here. Why is what are the new features of SQL 2016?
Yeah, look, the focus of the of this presentation is squarely at people developing code. Most of the sessions you'll find on SQL 2016 tend to be more of a DBA-focused sessions. And so I really want to spend some time drilling into A number of things that have changed in T-SQL, for example, and some of the sort of subtleties about how some of that is used. In particular, I then want to have a look at JSON support, which has been added in this version. And that's a good example, though, of something that's been close to the top of the requested feature list in the product since probably about 2006. In fact, in 2005, we got support for XML, but the industry pretty much moved to using JSON extensively in about 2006. And so that's been one of the highest requested features ever since. And so it's been really good to see some more attention come back on developer features in this version. And there's a real shift going on inside the product team in that regard, where the perception everybody had up until probably the last couple of years is it sort of felt like everything was heading down the sort of cloud path and nothing much was happening on the main SQL Server product in terms of language and so on, and that's now completely changed. So there's substantial work going on with JSON integration. Another big one in that area is temporal table support. And so this is the ability to, you'd almost say time travel, but the idea is that if I have, let's say, a table of customers and that changes over time, it's very convenient to be able to say, give me a list of customers, but, you know, in my select clause, say, look, tell me what it looked like, you know, at the beginning of the year. You know, rather than me having to sort of manually build history tables and things like that. And so being able to just embed that directly into the queries.
Okay, so for those of us who probably aren't that into SQL Server, I mean, is it something that's difficult to get into as a developer? Is it, you know, typically how will we start using
On the contrary, actually, it's something that's become easier and easier as time's gone on. In fact, one of the things that's happened in SQL Server 2016 that I'm personally very proud of is that we had badgered the product team to make it easier to get a hold of SQL Server and to get started working with it. And to give you an example, I have a friend who moved from Singapore, and in the previous arrangement, he spent nearly 2 weeks trying to buy a copy of the developer edition. And at the time, it was something like about $60. So the problem is the license vendors don't want to know about it, and it really isn't on the radar of the local team so much. But for someone getting started, it's really, really important. And by comparison, he was able to, say, go to the Postgres site and download and start running with the product maybe 15 minutes later. So we needed to be able to do that same thing with SQL Server. So they had, with Visual Studio, they introduced the Community Edition, and it got a lot of good feedback. They were talking endlessly about how good adoption it was of the Visual Studio Community Edition. And so we kept saying, look, where's the SQL Server Community Edition? You know, exactly the same thing. And so one of the brilliant things they did in SQL Server 2016 is they've now made the Developer Edition free and just directly downloadable. People have to join the Visual Studio Developer Express program. But apart from that, they can, that's trivial to join, and they can just download and now use the tools for free.
Okay, so are you seeing out there in the market a growing demand for SQL, particularly Microsoft SQL? I mean, are people moving more data, more information that way, or are these other, you know, open source databases I've heard about overtaking that role?
Yeah, look, that's actually one of the concerns that I had is there was a really, really big difference between the enterprise edition of the product and the standard edition of the product and the Express, the free one. And one of the things I was finding as I went around software houses is that people, whenever they compared SQL Server to other products, they compared the standard edition rather than the enterprise edition. And because in many cases, they wanted to be able to write code once and have it run on different versions. And so they actually weren't interested in anything that was only in the enterprise edition. And so that actually led to some very, very poor comparisons with other products. One of the, again, this is something I had ranted and beaten up the product group about for a very long time. And one of the things that's wonderful in SQL Server 2016 Service Pack 1 is they've now introduced a new consistent programming surface model. And most of the things that were enterprise only, unless they are high availability related and a few of the other areas, but the programming surface is now the same, basically right down through all the additions. And all of a sudden, that brings the big guns down in terms of SQL Server being able to compete with other products.
Okay, so obviously we're seeing a greater emphasis on SQL as a data platform, basically on-prem yep. and in the cloud. So let's sort of transition, I suppose, to the other presentation you've got. What's the difference, I suppose, or what are the simple differences, could you tell us, between SQL Server on-prem 2016 and Azure SQL?
One of the things that was a substantial change about 3 or 4 years ago is they moved to use the same code base. And so it used to be completely separate products that were built with a sort of a similar heritage. Now they're a single set of code. And so, in fact, the products are getting closer and closer and closer every day. But one of the discussions I'm always having with people is that while one of the targets is taking people from on-premises and migrating them to Azure SQL DB, to me, the primary area that we need to be focusing Azure SQL DB is on greenfield development and developers, right? So the thing is, rather than having the discussion endlessly that says what's different and what's here and what's not there, the better discussion is, why is this an awesome platform for you to build new applications against? And the thing is, it offers so much that is not offered in most other platforms that people have. And particularly if you look at a lot of developers, the back ends that they're working against today are not very robust. And, you know, I walk into all these places and I see what people are doing, you know. And there used to be the discussion that said, oh, you know, I'm worried about my data security and all these things and how reliable it is. But I have to tell you, look, on their worst day, they do a better job than almost any company I've ever walked into, including all of the big banks and people like that. They simply do a better job. And so the idea that you can get that sort of capability for not very many dollars a month is stunning stuff. I had a discussion on one of our local mailing lists when I was preparing for this session the other day, and I was asking people, why is it they don't use that if they're choosing not to? And it was interesting to listen. One of the guys said, yeah, but if I spin up a machine on premises, it's much cheaper. And I said, well, is it really though? You know, and when we got down to it, he was talking about taking a garden variety machine, spinning up a single copy of SQL Server, and that was it. But I mean, he had no high availability. He had no replicas. He had no automatic failover. He has all of those things that are there automatically for you in the case of Azure SQL DB. And if you start to compare, you know, what does it cost me to have three replicas of my database running and, you know, live copying of the data, you know, in terms of log, you know, real time across from machine to machine, and also automated failovers and so on, and being able to, more importantly, dial up and down the performance level as needed, the comparison then just falls apart with on-premises options.
Okay, so, I mean, obviously the same thing when it comes to a lot of Azure resources. We're paying by the minute typically. We're mm-hmm. paying just for what we need. We get the scalability. We get the redundancy. We get all this other stuff built into it. But as you noted, there is a fair hesitancy, or there is a, you know, people seem to find reasons not to go into the Azure cloud with the SQL. I mean, again, is it the same tools that they've always used? Is it more or less
yep,
the same thing for them?
Same tools, all of that. And in fact, the thing that's impressive now is that all the new code and so on actually gets put into the cloud first, and then it's deployed on-premises sometime later. And so SQL Server 2016 is actually one of the first versions that when it first went in the door on-premises, I was really not concerned about it. And the difference is with this version, this is the first time that the code that they were deploying on-premises has already been running millions of databases in Azure SQL DB.
Okay, so obviously we're looking at a cloud and on-prem, but is there a hybrid solution? Can we sort of, you know, utilize the best of both worlds in our environment? Maybe we're looking to transition eventually to Azure, but is there an option for a hybrid arrangement when it comes to SQL?
Yeah, look, lots and lots of hybrid arrangements. And so the most straightforward, obviously, is you could decide to have, you know, a database there and things on premises. So to give you an example, doing work with a company who has maybe a couple of hundred stores around the country, and previously what they did is each of the individual stores would connect in via a VPN to the head office, and they would all log ship all their databases to a central location, and then the head office could then run queries against the databases and so on. The whole thing was let's just call it unreliable in terms of an arrangement, because it was totally dependent on so many moving pieces for it all to work, and also upon the connectivity in the head office all the time as well. Now, even that, by comparison, we moved a common set of data to Azure SQL DB. We made linked servers from all of the stores and the head office across to that central location. And then we got all the stores to push data directly into that Azure SQL DB and to pull, you know, catalog changes, products and things like that back down from that central location as well. And suddenly the whole thing just ran so much better. And the other thing about it is that instead of just worrying about the bandwidth in and out of the head office, suddenly it's every single store able to use their own bandwidth effectively to get to the cloud.
Okay, so again, it looks as though we're, well, at least Microsoft anyway, is covering all the bases here with SQL. We can still do some on-prem, we can do a bit of hybrid, and we can also do the cloud in general. Now, obviously,
you can also do serious hybrid, right? So, for example, if I have a SQL Server box on-premises, I can even, if I partition my data, for example, I can put a file group in an Azure storage account in the cloud, basically from my on-premises machine. So I have those sorts of options as well. So I could have effectively infinite storage in tables without even changing the application.
Okay, so again, we're getting lots and lots of options here now. This is something that obviously developers can take advantage of with the tools that they have, mm-hmm. and you know, whether they're wanting to do any of those configurations. But the initial session here, you've got while your next application should be used Azure SQL DB as the data store, seems to be aimed at you're advocating that a new application is best in Azure SQL. Is that sort of you?
Because it is a different environment, right? So the thing is, there are different characteristics about the environment. So something that is built to target that environment will always do a better job than something that was designed in a different environment and then was sort of picked up and migrated. That's never quite the same thing. I mean, the best example is probably latency. And so if you build your applications with the assumption that the SQL Server you're working against is right there on the same box beside you, then you don't notice all the calls that you make to the database. But I can guarantee you that the minute you start adding even a transition to a data center somewhere, all of a sudden you do start noticing that. Now, if you build your application with that in mind, you actually build a better application anyway. Right? So to give you an example, I was in a site a little while ago where they had a Windows application, and from when they started it up till when the first screen came up, they did 90,000 calls to the database. Now, it's a tribute to SQL Server that that application started up in 30 seconds. But if we simply moved the database out to a data center somewhere, then suddenly you'd be talking about a couple of days to start up. If you had a data center in Singapore, you'd be talking about 2 weeks for it to start up. Right? Now, the thing is, and you could look at that and say, oh, well, you know, that's a problem then because, you know, latency is going to cause us all these sort of dramas. No, it isn't. The thing is, 90,000 calls to the database in the first place is not sensible. You know, and so what it does do is it teaches you to build less chatty applications and to sort of bulk up the things that you're doing. And one of the things we used to do years ago is we used to get web developers and connect them with a dial-up modem to their database server.
Them's were the days.
And they became very aware of every call they made to the database. It's very easy to write very poor applications if you're sitting right on top of the server.
Okay, so just a general rule of thumb here. If we have a, you know, older SQL environment, say, that's not particularly complex, it using typically the SQL just for simple table storage. Mm-hmm. Is there a lot involved in moving that application into Azure, or can we drag and drop?
Most of those move pretty easily, right? In fact, there are migration tools built in the product that make that sort of thing quite easy. And one of the upsides of that is the vast majority of sites I go into, people still use the product like it's SQL Server 2000, right? Now, that's a problem, but in the case of migrating these applications, that actually works quite well because they tend to have not been at all adventurous in anything they do in the application. Okay. What will kill them, as I said, is if they have chatty applications and they're trying to keep the application in one location and the database somewhere else. But the important thing that this does do for them, if they're building new applications, you can imagine that it gives you a very robust platform to be building against. Many, many teams now are geographically dispersed. So the other thing is it gives you a central cloud-based place that the databases are that you're working against. And that in itself can be a substantial benefit, rather than, again, endlessly trying to work out how to VPN people in and so on.
Yeah, again, it's very interesting. There is huge demand for it, but again, it seems to be there's still that hesitancy, as you mentioned, for the developer side to actually go in and embrace some of these and move their stuff across. And it sounds as though it is relatively easy for them to do that, but perhaps, again, there's this hesitancy because they feel they have to relearn everything from scratch.
Well, look, there is some of that, right? There is some of that. And from the point of view that a lot of people who work with SQL Server have spent their time, you know, very focused on low-level, you know, I/O aspects and things like that. Now, on on-premises things, that's really important, right? But in the new brave world order, you know, all that matters is how good SQL Server is as a platform for building new applications. And where people need to be is not managing at the level of disks and I/O and things like that. You want to be at the level of managing declaratively. You just want a T-SQL endpoint you talk to. You want it to go faster, you pick. You dial up a knob. You want it to go slower, you dial down a knob. You want a replica readable in another place, you just tick the box and say, I want the replica. That's the level you should be managing at, not, you know, how do I build all the underlying groups and set up the availability groups and async replicas and, you know, you don't want to be doing that, you know. It's a bit like if I look at Exchange, I, for the life of me, I don't understand why people run Exchange in-house nowadays. You know, I go into places where they have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people and they run Exchange in-house. And I look at the management, they spend a fortune on managing that. And yet I know that the person who's paying that check is getting a far worse email system than a kid who pays $5 a month to Microsoft. Now that's not a long-term plan, right? And I look at ourselves and the company I was in before years ago. Now, we wanted to federate with Microsoft so we could share free busy calendars and things. Setting up federation was a nightmare at the time. By comparison, we use Office 365. I went in, checked the box for the federation, and it's worked ever since. I couldn't care less how it works. And, like, why would I want to know?
Yeah, exactly. I think that, again, it's interesting to see from the database side the move to Azure because, again, a lot of the third-party applications I see out there are typically based on SQL and typically seem to reside on-prem and typically have an excuse, in inverted commas, that they can't be migrated to the cloud. And it's always interesting to actually get that authoritative word to say, look, you know, it's not nearly as difficult as
Look, it's very much the case, particularly if you can also pick the application up and co-locate it in the same data centers, you know, and that will itself, overcome an awful lot of limitations.
Okay. All right. So, the two sessions in summary, is there anything that we haven't covered? Is there anything else that you'd like to know people who may be thinking about coming, why they should come to one or either or both of your sessions?
Well, as I said, in the case of the Azure SQL DB one, I'm really wanting to reach out there to developers or people or architects who are looking at building new applications. I just want them to stop and think about maybe we should build it this way instead. Because down the track, that's where they're going to wish they were somewhere along the way. And so, you know, rather than trying to get there at the end, you know, design that way right up front. And the other session is just really, you know, just to have a detailed look at 2016 from a developer point of view, where, as I said, most of the materials out there are from a DBA point of view, but just to have a look from a developer point of view and see, you know, why this is actually a very, very significant release.
All right, so appreciate the information on that and on your sessions. And as we're asking all speakers of the event, you've been an experienced and you've been through a number of TechEd and Ignite sessions. I mean, to those people who've never been, to those people sitting on the fence who are umming and ahhing about whether they should attend, what's your sort of feedback on the Microsoft Ignite event in general? Why should technical people, developers, IT pros come along to these sort of large-scale Microsoft events?
Look, there's two reasons people usually give for this. The number one reason, of course, is to meet other people. You know, there's so many other people who are doing what you are doing, and you could reach out and talk to and so on. One of the interesting challenges for people when they're sort of first attending these events, it's very easy if they're a little bit shy, perhaps, to sort of almost be a bit overwhelmed by how much is going on and different things, and everybody seems to know everybody and so on. Look, don't feel bad about that. In particular, just open up, you know, if you see, wander in, sit down at lunch, talk to the people that are sitting at the table right there with you. You know, spend time doing that. Have a look at the people in the sessions, you know, with you. Have a chat to the people beside you, you know, like just get to know people. And do not be afraid to spend some time having a chat to the speakers. All of the speakers have, you know, time allocated to have people come up if they want to make a one-on-one time and have a chat to them, pretty much everybody. I mean, it might be a bit hard to get and see Scott Guthrie or somebody, but the thing is, most of the speakers will be able to make that possible. I know they're also organizing sort of like experts areas and things where you'll be able to just wander down and find people that you know, are similarly minded, you know, and be able to have a chat in a more laid back sort of fashion. So look, I think that's good. And it's also great from the point of view of being able to just talk to people in the speakers, but particularly who have just worked with the product for a very long time, and or people who are working in the product group right now, because again, you'll probably pick up insights that you just would, you would spend forever trying to find those things online.
Okay, so to finish off, what are your top tips for surviving Ignite? We've had some people recommending comfortable shoes, other people saying drink less coffee, some other people saying drink more
shoes, coffee. A little bit, but it's not so bad, okay? So the Gold Coast Convention Centre is actually a fairly close sort of arrangement, and so we've got sort of downstairs areas, upstairs. People, you still end up wandering around a bit, but it's nothing like the other venues. You know, if you get to some of the overseas ones, say like Orlando or something, literally across the main hall, it's something like, you know, 0.8 of a kilometre or something, you know, so and just from one end to the other to go from room to room. So it's nothing like that. So this is actually a much more intimate sort of arrangement. The rooms are all down one hall, two or three halls upstairs and a couple of things. And there are areas outside there with tables and usually free coffee all the time and so on. You'll find people just sitting out there all the time. And so I would say absolutely just wander up and talk to people is the key thing.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank Greg very much for his time. If people want to get in touch with you about what you've discussed, if for some reason they aren't able to make it to Ignite but do want to follow up on some of the topics you've discussed here, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Yeah, look, easiest one is just greg@greglow.com is the most obvious one. We have at sqldownunder.com, you'll find all sorts of contact details there, just sqldownunder.com. We've also got a whole series of tools for SQL people that are about to come out in the next week or so. They're not on the site yet. But if they, I'm not sure what day this will actually get released. Rob will put that out. But the thing is, if you look at back about mid-February, by the time Ignite's on, there's a whole series of free tools we're expecting to have up on the site as well. And there's also all the podcasts. And so if you have interest in just hearing discussions with, you know, people that I think are interesting in some way in the SQL Server community, there's probably a good 50 or 60 podcasts up there at the moment in detail.
Good. Excellent. Well, there's a huge amount of resources, and encourage everybody to obviously attend Greg's sessions at Ignite, especially if you're into the SQL and into the developing side. I think it's a really big area and there's lots and lots of demand. I think Greg will probably agree with me that SQL certainly seems to be program du jour at the moment, very big demands for people to be.
One of the things is that I just look at the size of customers we're working with, right? And in the higher end with SQL Server, we used to be working with medium-sized companies. Then if you look at now in Australia, pretty much all the banks have some investment in that there. If you look at like the large superannuation companies and things, we're in all of those. But now we're also, the companies I'm involved with are doing things like we're rolling out things, you know, in the UK, for example, where some of the retirement fund companies would be literally 30 times the size of the biggest ones here, you know. So the thing is, you know, it's going into companies that you just didn't see SQL Server in before. Actually, one thing I should mention too is that there seem to be plans for Monday night before the event starts, between 5 and 7. We're looking at some meetups there. For the SQL one, I was looking at, we haven't finalized the plan, but looking at keeping it kind of low key, but it'll probably be called something like SQL Coffee. And so that'll be a good opportunity for people to just come along and have a chat.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll make sure that all of those notes are in the blog post and in the show notes so that you can make contact with Greg and keep up with, obviously, the resources that he's provided. But again, make sure that you do make time, if you are at Ignite, to go jump into his session and don't be afraid to ask questions and follow up with him.
Every session that we do, what I'm planning on doing is also heading down to the experts area afterwards. So rather than, you know, trying to get into a crowd or something of people asking questions after the session, just wander on down to the experts area and we'll be down there after the session.
Excellent. Well, that makes it nice and easy for everybody. So, again, we'll round it off, and I'll thank Greg very much for his time and his information. And is there any last thoughts there, Greg, before we wind up?
No, awesome, Robert. Just hope to see. Listen, we'll just check it too, but it may be that people who aren't at Ignite, who are local to the Gold Coast, I know that's not a lot of people by comparison, but I think they'll be able to come along, I'm hoping, on the Monday night thing, so.
Excellent. All right. We'll make sure that we get the information out there to them. So, again, thank Greg very much for his time. And, again, thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.